You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
This bill creates 87,000 new IRS agents. It doubles the size of the IRS. Those IRS agents are designed to come after you. They're not designed to come after the billionaires and the big corporations. They're designed to come after small businesses and working families across this country. The Democrats are making the IRS bigger than the Pentagon, plus the Department of State, plus the FBI, plus the Border Patrol combined. The IRS is going to be bigger.
Those are the words of Senator Ted Cruz from the other day, talking about this massive spending bill being voted on tomorrow by the House. But about 150 of them, the House members will not be there. That includes members of both parties. They've signed proxy letters so someone else can vote for them. We're replaying those remarks from Senator Cruz for a particular reason. Let me set the stage for you. First of all, this is August 11, 2022. We are live streaming on Rumble.com. Now, Senator Cruz, in talking about how much bigger the IRS is going to be, keep this in mind. No doubt to target more middle and lower class taxpayers. And then today, it was noted the IRS website had on it stating IRS applicants must be willing to carry a firearm and be willing to use deadly force. That was on the IRS website, but it's since vanished. Poof! Somebody said, ooh, we should get that off. It's drawing too much attention. Now, there are members of the IRS that carry out special raids, and they go into areas of danger. Certainly, they need to be prepared for that. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But right after saying you're going to put 87,000 new IRS agents in action, and they show up on the website, you must be willing to carry a firearm and be willing to use deadly force. If the American public wasn't already suspicious and doubtful what's going to happen, that just accelerated, did it not? More reaction today from the FBI raid on the Trump home in Florida. Why? Who ordered it? And reports that the staff was ordered to shut down all security cameras in the house. Apparently they didn't, and now the FBI is demanding the tapes. Don't know where that stands. At last check, we're waiting for more information. And what was in the affidavit presented to even get the search warrant to begin with? More questions about the judge who signed that search warrant, giving the authority for the agents to go in, based on whatever was inside the affidavit, which apparently no one has seen other than the FBI, the Attorney General's office, DOJ, and the judge who signed it. Plus, FBI Director Christopher Wray responding to alleged threats to FBI agents for this raid. There was a lot of talk. In fact, there was some people saying, well, boy, tomorrow we go to war. They didn't mean actual fighting. It was a metaphorical statement in the sense of just being, we got to get ready to get everything in gear because we've got to make sure we win these elections. But today, someone did breach the FBI office in Ohio. Shots were fired on a chase. At last report, the guy is still on the run. Now, I want to point out, no one should be attacking a federal agent or any law authority for political backlash. They're baiting you to do that. Don't do that. But Ray's choice of words, was it a slip of tongue or intended? He said these are deplorable threats. Deplorable. The same way Hillary described Trump supporters, remember? When she said these deplorables. How close do they fit, glove in hand? We're also going to have a guest today, Sharice Trump, Executive Director of Speech First, on protecting students from biased teaching and making universities and teachers pay a monetary price if they do not follow what should be followed, teaching, not indoctrination. Plus more details of pushing children into transsexual operations. And then Liz Cheney and her race, she probably really doesn't care if she wins or not. Have you any idea how much that woman has made since she became a member of the U.S. Senate? The numbers are astonishing. Now, IRS agents, are you looking for something to investigate? Would that be a target? It's a Republican, in name only. A lot to cover the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere, and it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water. Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with the Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
This is a Department of Justice supposed to be, but it's a Department of Trust Us. And that isn't the way the American government works. Transparency brings accountability, and this extraordinary action on this administration, whether it's Biden, whether it's Garland, or whether it's Ray, or whether it's somebody under them that Ray didn't even know about it, I didn't even get an answer on that. But we need to have trust in the Department of FBI, and this just destroys that confidence, and particularly the political bias that I've already proven through my investigations.
That is Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa. By his investigations, he's talking about these whistleblowers that have come forward to him and Senator Johnson, FBI whistleblowers, talking about not only what's happening in the FBI, and I should also say DOJ whistleblowers, apparently coming out and talking to them and giving them detailed information of what's actually happening inside our two major law agencies. Department of Justice and the FBI, all under the Attorney General Merrick Garland. We already know where he stands. But, there's a twist in the story. Before I get to that, I mentioned in the opening monologue the reports of the security cameras at the Trump home. When the agents went in, they ordered all the security cameras turned off. Eric Trump being quoted, Trump's older son, of course, saying that they were told to turn them off, but staff refused to turn them off, and it captured, according to Eric Trump, they were doing things that were not proper, things they shouldn't have been. Those are the words of Eric Trump. Exactly what, and if he's right or wrong, I don't know. I haven't seen the tape. Now we're getting word, I had mentioned earlier It was not clear if the DOJ did have them. Now, apparently, the DOJ does have the tapes. They better not be destroyed. They know better than that. Now, I mentioned there's a twist in what you heard Senator Grassley saying. We need to get to the bottom of it, whoever's involved. Well, you're going to need a scapegoat. And apparently, looking at a piece presented right now, this coming off from this source involves Newsweek and a couple others, I believe. The Newsweek report. I know there's much speculation out there that this is political persecution, but it's really the best and the worst of bureaucracy in action. It's a DOJ source, not named. They wanted to punctuate the fact this was a routine law enforcement action stripped of any political overtones, and yet they got exactly the opposite. No kidding. He said they were seeking to avoid any media circus. Well, that failed, didn't it? So now there's a story going around that senior U.S. Department of Justice officials are blaming that would, of course, DOJ would be Attorney General Merrick Garland, if he's among them. They found a scapegoat. They're apparently going to blame former, because it might be imminent. They're going to blame FBI Director for Christopher Wray for this raid. Yeah, they're going to directly name and throw under the bus the FBI director to take the pressure off U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. That is where, as they say, the rubber will hit the road, because if you're going to make him a scapegoat, don't you imagine he's going to start spilling everything? Congressman James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, is with an oversight committee, and he says, we want to see all of this laid out.
The National Archives is a sleepy government agency that comes before the Oversight Committee at least once a year. Oversight has policy jurisdiction over the National Archives. Is, you know, basically a little organization that keeps all the historical records. And by all accounts, this subpoena was generated by the National Archives. This is something that's unprecedented. Remember, what they're saying is that the president may have kept classified information. But Maria, the president of the United States determines what is and is not classified. And the president of the United States has the authority to declassify something that may have previously been classified. So if the National Archives generated this unprecedented FBI raid on the former president of the United States, we want to know all the communication between the National Archives and the FBI and between them and the Department of Justice.
Now, that is, again, the comment from Congressman Comer, who is with the Oversight Committee, as he was appearing on Maria Bartiromo, and said, our Oversight Committee, we oversee the National Archives, and if that's why they were carrying out this raid, we want more details. And I hope they stick to their guns on it and insist on it. In the meantime, Margo Cleveland, writing for the Federalist, points out that there are probably four good reasons you could say as to why they went ahead and carried out this raid. She says, for one thing, maybe they did not anticipate the average American's reaction, and that is, we're angry as hell, wanting to know, why are you doing this? What's the justification? And then others are saying they did it because they want protesters. They want to have people battling over this event. I played for you yesterday. I'm going to bother doing it again. I already gave him some airplay, and that's O'Donnell from MSNBC going on there mocking Trump supporters. I thought you guys would be upset over this. Why aren't you out there in the streets and everything? Because we don't go out in the street, torch buildings, throw firebombs, and directly attack police just because we don't like something. That's why I say again, do not let them bait you or anyone into taking any action, certainly attacking a federal agent. Most likely any federal agent in your region had nothing at all to do with what was taking place. And even those at the Trump home were doing only what they were told. You got to go way up the chain to find out where it really started. But Senator Cruz of Texas said wherever it originated and whoever ordered it, this was wrong.
Unfortunately, one of the worst outcomes we've seen, both from the Barack Obama administration and now the Joe Biden administration, has been the deep politicization and weaponization of the Department of Justice and the FBI. They've turned the machinery of government and law enforcement into a weapon to attack their political enemies. And it is an incredible dereliction of duty for law enforcement to be entrapping people into criminal conduct for political ends. And this FBI, this Department of Justice, is content to remain thoroughly political and partisan. And it's deeply, deeply concerning.
Yeah, and we do want to know who ordered it, who started it. As I said, senior U.S. Department Justice officials apparently are speculating that the blame is going to fall on the FBI Director Wray, so they can protect the main boss, Merrick Garland. Wray, of course, had been appointed by Trump. Members of his staff said, you need to get rid of this guy. He's another deep swamp creature. And Trump thought at that time, he thought, well, I'm sure he'll go in, he'll do better now, since he knows he has support. Well, he didn't. So why not go after Wray? Because he was a Trump appointee. Garland is a Biden appointee. But this subpoena that was issued to go in, I take it back, a warrant, not a subpoena, was based upon an affidavit that had to be filled out with particular information, then for a judge to review it and decide, yes, there's enough here to authorize a raid. Congressman Troy Nehls, Republican of Texas, has been in law enforcement for several years and had previously been a sheriff for 3 years. He gives you details of the protocol involving a warrant.
I was in law enforcement for 30 years, 8 years as a sheriff of a large county in Texas, and it just takes probable cause to execute a warrant to search someone's home. So they found the liberal judge, and obviously we know a little bit about this judge. This judge was a big supporter of Obama back then, so all you need is a little bit of probable cause, and you get a crazy judge to sign it. Next thing you know, they're into Mar-a-Lago, looking around, snooping around. They're doing everything they can to try to destroy this president. They do not want to see this president on the ballot, on the ticket in 2024. So that's what this is all about. So
it is what it's all about, although Lawrence O'Donnell and even some guests for Rachel Maddow were saying, well, really, really, Democrats would love. In fact, I take it back. I think it was the Morning Joe Coffee guy who said, actually, Democrats want Trump on there because they're sure they can beat him. That's going to be a rude awakening if they believe that. But another former FBI agent, in talking about this warrant and how it was carried out and using the affidavit, whatever actually said, and then getting in front of a judge and rushing forward, former FBI agent John Inarelli and his remarks.
I find it strange with the urgency because, yes, there were ongoing talks, and I understand talks broke down. What a shocker. Attorneys not agreeing with one another. That disagreement stuff happens all the time in cases like this, and you continue talking. The FBI would have put a warrant together with the concurrence of DOJ if they thought something was going to happen. Say there was classified information that they believed was suddenly going to be made public. Barring that, it's unimaginable to me that they would have executed a warrant like this on such a high-profile individual. My concern here is it takes time to put a warrant of this magnitude together. You have to write the affidavit. You have to write the warrant. You have to get a judge to approve it. This wasn't thrown together in a matter of days. My feeling is that with direction from high above, whether it's the FBI or DOJ, get your ducks in a row because we want a search warrant. It's a matter of when the opportunity would arise to give them the right to have that search warrant. I'm concerned that this was long planned and not based on necessity.
In other words, it was a political act from the beginning. The premise we were told is that Trump had some 15 to 20 boxes of classified papers in his home. And apparently somebody inside the home who had visited or whatever, they had seen things, and they reported, where are you going to find this, where are you going to find that? And don't know if it's a member of his staff or whatever, but they're making up all this. But two things to keep in mind. First of all, when he was president, he had the authority to declassify anything he wanted to. Anything. It's no longer considered classified intel. And secondly, they were already working with lawyers on getting some of those documents to them. And in fact, the FBI had been in his home a couple of months earlier. He invited them in, take a look around, whatever. Maybe those are the ones who then put together the information for the affidavit. We have yet to see it in detail. And then it suddenly decided those papers give us a reason to raid his home. And despite what I was reading for you earlier, that members of the DOJ said, well, we didn't want it to blow up into a circus. You knew it would the moment you rushed in with 30 armed FBI agents. That's why I say right now, apparently according to sources being quoted, who are nameless, of course, they're saying Christopher Wray's to blame, not Merrick Garland. Wray's the first body to be thrown under the bus. But again, this is just repetitive and indicative of what we've been watching for some time. When we come back, I want you to hear from Senator Comer again, and Congressman Comer, that is, on what this is proving, because this is not a surprise to many Americans, shouldn't be, but the question is, what is going to be the next shoe to drop? Hopefully there'll be a full-scale investigation, but you got to win the House first. That happens in November. You got to win the House, and you need to get control of the Senate as well. When we come back, you'll hear from Congressman James Comer, Republican of Kentucky. The deep state lives.
And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger. And you don't mess around with Jim.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
The deep state is real. This is further evidence of that. This is another black eye in our intelligence community. We on the Oversight Committee had already requested the information from the 51 former intelligence officials who said the laptop was a hoax. It looked like Russia disinformation, which we have possession of the laptop now. And I can assure you it's not a hoax. It is Hunter Biden's laptop. And there's a lot of bad stuff on there. The reason no one's held accountable primarily is because the Republicans are in the minority and that Merrick Garland's in charge of the Department of Justice. Hopefully in January, that's going to change. With subpoena power, we're going to be very transparent with the American people on all the wrongdoing and conflicts of interest and the weaponization from our intelligence community. So the FBI is going to be in the hot seat. Merrick Garland's going to be in the hot seat on Jim Jordan's Judiciary Committee. And hopefully we can hold people accountable and change the rules to where something like this never happens again.
That's exactly what we need to do. Again, that's Congressman James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, saying the deep state still exists. And speaking of what the FBI is supposed to stand for, and out of all the FBI agents, only a handful were involved in the raid, and they were doing what they were told. So you can't blame every FBI agent for everything going wrong. But you begin to have a mistrust issue with the agency you should trust. And to that extent, again, I want you to listen to former FBI agent John Annarelli on the FBI mission.
And this political motivation that we're seeing in the FBI is coming from way up at the top. The rank and file agents you mentioned earlier, they want to do the right job. They want to do what they're trained to do, but they're being directed and pushed by other places. And yes, I believe there's people, including the Department of Justice, that want things for political reasoning, whereas the FBI needs to be nonpartisan. They need to be non-political to be able to do their job.
That's exactly right. And again, that's a former FBI agent. Now, Congressman Nails of Texas was in a meeting the night of the raid in the New Jersey home of Donald Trump. And he was asked, how did Trump respond when word began to break that the FBI agents, when he got a call from his son, hey, FBI agents are here, and they're going through every room in the house, told us all to get out. What was he doing? What was Trump's response?
You didn't see Donald Trump sweating at all. He was very cordial. He was signing hats. We had a great conversation for almost 3 hours. So you didn't see Donald Trump. He didn't seem nervous. He didn't seem confused. He was straight to the point. He was excited. I'm telling you, he's coming back. He's coming back with a vengeance. So we were there. We support the president. We have his back. And we need to make sure that we go, when we take the House in 2022, we investigate all of this. We need to investigate it. The American people want answers. We need to investigate right. The DOJ, the FBI, all of it.
We do. And I mentioned to you earlier that Joe Scarborough yesterday was saying basically that really the Democrats really want Trump to run because they're sure they can beat him. Most of us are of the opinion, no, they don't want him anywhere near it. They want every, not every candidate, but 90-plus percent of the candidates he's endorsed in primaries won their races. And, of course, he's whether or not he runs, and this might really incite him to go ahead and run for sure, but he may also simply be a kingmaker and move other people into the spots. And the complaints against the FBI in general, they're not that far off. And I feel for the FBI agents caught in the center that, you know, they're doing an honest job that they were given, but now they're tarred and feathered by these other agents or somebody higher up that gave an order. But MSNBC host Joe Scarborough made a point of saying some of the same people now making dark, ominous threats, now comparing the FBI to Stalin, suggesting this is a banana republic, now say we have to go to war against the FBI. These people hate law and order. That's Joe Scarborough of MSNBC, one of the leaders of the leftists, and saying that Americans, patriotic Americans, hate the FBI and we need to go to war, actual war with them? No, no, no. They need to be corralled and corrected and put back on track. And some of those at the top, yes, they should be held accountable. Coming up, the latest efforts to try to protect your children from being indoctrinated in schools, even to the extent of issuing fines and maybe harsher punishment. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
For some companies, loyalty is a lost word. You give a company your business, your years, but in the end, you're just a number. But at Ackerman Toyota, loyalty is appreciated. Thousands of customers personally know this. New Ackerman customers quickly see it. Loyalty defines Ackerman Toyota for all customers and employees. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. Reminding you, we are live streaming at rumble.com. Simply go to rumble.com, enter in the search engine, one word, Larry Connors USA. It'll take you to our page. You'll see previous postings. Push the button for live. You join us in studio. And joining us now on the air is Sherrice Trump, executive director of the Speech First Group. Sherrice, glad to have you aboard.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Larry.
Let's clarify right away, Trump, relationship?
No relation, no relation.
Okay. Now, I know Speech First, let me let you explain in the briefest way you can as to what your intent and the goal is.
Yeah, so we're a First Amendment organization that focuses on free speech. We advocate, educate students on their legal rights on campus, advocate for their free speech rights on college campuses, but also litigate against colleges that violate our student members' rights of free speech.
All right. I wanted to make that clear that you're focusing on colleges, but we know a lot of this indoctrination starts earlier. But your effort as you remember, the Goldwater Institute, you're primarily going to deal with colleges, institutes, whether you would say, of higher learning.
Yeah. We worked with Goldwater recently on some model legislation. But yes, we are, we focus definitely on higher education and colleges because a lot of this does start in the K-12 level with the education, what we've seen lately with indoctrinating students. But in the college level, it's a little bit different of a phenomenon that's been going on, and it's been going on much longer. So it's deeper and more insidious, and policymakers on campuses are trying to get away with some pretty crazy things these days.
Let me run this by you. I know you're focusing on the institutes of higher learning and so forth, and I have a hard time calling them higher learning when they're doing some of the crap they're doing. But are you aware of the Fargo, North Dakota school board last night voted 7-2 to cancel saying the Pledge of Allegiance, saying it doesn't align with diversity code?
No, I didn't hear that, but that honestly it does not surprise me. It's incredibly disappointing to hear things like that.
And isn't that exactly what is happening in a lot of our institutes of higher learning? They don't necessarily recite the Pledge of Allegiance, but anything they consider that they consider in conflict with diversity code and inclusiveness on the normally they mean exclusiveness, then they fight tooth and nail.
Yeah, I mean, they don't even educate students on First Amendment rights or what their free speech rights are. They don't even talk about the importance of viewpoint diversity and debating and having these open discussions where you can challenge each other. You know, that's where that was all supposed to take place, is the college campus, but universities are not emphasizing that. In fact, they're discouraging it. And they talk to students oftentimes, especially in their freshman orientations, about how speech can actually be dangerous and how sensitive everyone is and how you should be aware that you can pretty much offend them by saying anything.
And as you point out in some of your preparation for what you guys are trying to put in place, this model legislation, even if they don't exactly get the students to toe the line, they chill their speech, they chill their feelings. In other words, they're fearful to speak up.
Yeah. So the model legislation is specifically focused on what we call bias reporting systems. They go by various different names on campuses, but oftentimes they will include the word bias in the title. And this is something that is very insidious. It's very insidious policy. Most people don't know about it until they get reported, especially students. And it's essentially an anonymous reporting system where students are encouraged to report on one another and on their professors for what the school determines is a bias incident. And oftentimes the bias incident is defined very broadly and very subjectively in a way that it's either something that someone finds offensive, someone finds something unwanted, maybe a joke or stereotype. Universities will often list microaggressions as an example of a bias incident or a political affiliation. And we surveyed over 800 universities just this year just to see how many of them had, public and private, just to see how many of them had bias reporting systems, and saw that 56% of them, of the schools we looked at, do. And we have a map tracker now on our website at speechfirst.org. But it's pretty scary to see how many of these schools are incorporating these policies.
I'm surprised you only found 56%. I mean, you must be really narrowing your scope of what you're going to consider an issue.
We are. Yeah, we are. We looked for something that is specifically soliciting reports on bias incidents and has a reporting mechanism on campus. And so that is, there are other reporting mechanisms, or there are other, you know, bias types, ways that students can report on each other, but it's not, we did narrow the scope so that we could have some consistency in the numbers.
Is there talk, a part of this model legislation you're preparing, to not only protect the students' First Amendment rights, but to punish the university and teachers that continue to violate their rights?
Yes, that is something that I very much insisted upon putting in the model legislation. It was an option for state legislators to include a provision that would remove funding, state funding, from the universities that violate this policy
Good.
And to withhold that for as many months necessary until the university complies, because this is something they are so used to getting away with, these policies. Whenever you see something come at the state legislative level, a lot of the times it's watered down or it's only focusing on K through 12. Universities actually, depending on state laws, a lot of the times they can actually be held accountable directly by the state legislators and the governor when it comes to the financial support, rather than having to go through the Treasury Department. So it's actually a little easier for states to punish universities on the financial side of things.
What are you doing to reach out to alumni that's supporting and of course, that to make sure they're aware of what's going on, the indoctrination? Because many times, even in grade school, kids aren't telling parents what's happening at school. And in university and colleges, they seldom, if ever, other than bringing the wash home for mom to do. And they say, bring it home so I can go through the pocket, see what's in there. But go ahead.
Alumni, the older alumni have been getting more involved and more interested because their alma maters are getting really bad reputations right now for just not respecting students' rights. But I think it's important, too, that the younger alumni get involved, the ones who are just graduating or who've been out of college for a few years, because they know more than most that what's going on campus. They were just there. So they're the ones who can speak more about it, actually more openly about what happened, because now they're not beholden to the campus to worry about their grades or their graduation status. They can actually speak out. And so we are seeing a slight movement with alumni getting involved, but it really usually is the ones who've been out of school for generations. We need to get some of the younger alumni more involved because, like I said, they can really tell the stories.
You know, it's interesting you raise that point. I have a good friend whose daughter is a great soccer star. She got a full ride scholarship for soccer. And he said, she's going up there, and I'm happy she's going, but I'm worried if she's going to be changed and tainted. I said, where's she going? He said, Georgetown. I said, well, good luck. Good luck with that. And sure enough, when she came back into the first year, he got her an interview with a business associate, start telling where she's going to go and what she's looking to do. And as she described what she's learning and so forth, it's some kind of diversity, this and this. And the man she's sitting in front of said, I have no idea what you're talking about and where that's going to fit in your career.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when it comes to Georgetown, I mean, I'm an alum of their graduate school, and I'll be honest, I didn't know too much about their policies until I started digging in deeper and I realized, oh my gosh, they have some really, really bad ones. I mean, they list the bias incidents as a crime that can be reported on their campus police website, which is it's like literal thought police at that point. You're actually encouraging students. You're putting it in their mind that it is a crime to be biased against someone and that they should actually report on one another. That is something out of East Germany where you have neighbors reporting on neighbors.
Yeah.
This is something that's very, very terrible and should be concerning to everyone, just that the fact that we're putting students in the mindset of reporting on one another. What? And I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but by the way, students are utilizing these systems. They report on each other very regularly, and that should be even more concerning because now they're in the habit of doing this, and they think this is normal and this is right.
Well, where does sexual harassment come in this if it's transgender playing in women's sports and the other women, they say, look, I worked hard to get this scholarship to be here. Now I'm not going to be able to get anything else out of it.
Oh, yeah. In many cases, that can be considered a bias incident by just making that statement. And you
really?
Could be reported. Yeah. And with the new Title IX rules that the Biden administration is proposing, just by making that statement, you could actually be accused of harassment under the Title IX policy and investigated as such. And, you know, because now that gender identity will be added as a protected class and they have changed the language of what it constitutes sexual harassment when it comes to verbal actions. Now, all of a sudden, students are going to be forced to confirm gender identity. They're going to be forced to use pronouns. And if they don't, someone can report them for Title IX harassment.
You're listening to Sharice Trump, the executive director of Speech First. Very quickly, tell them where they can learn more information and what you're doing and what you hope to accomplish.
Yeah, we're at speechfirst.org, and you know, you can go on our website, learn more about us, sign up to become a member. You'll get our regular newsletters. But definitely, we have a tip line for freshman orientation materials because, you know, students are reentering campus right now, and it's hard to find out what's going on campus. And a lot of times, this is that the groundwork is laid in the freshman orientation. So we encourage all students who are about to enter the campus to send us their materials.
Speechfirst.org. Sharice Trump, thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thanks so much.
We will do it again. That's fascinating.
Sure.
That's fascinating in the sense that it's going way too far. Coming up, to show you how far the libs have gone, they have turned Hispanics really, really against them.
connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
The other day, some listeners saw me in Cafe Napoli, and one said, "We see you here all the time." I said, "Yes, you do. I am the Cafe Napoli ambassador." Truth is, I've been a Napoli customer for decades, when there was only the Clayton location, then Town and Country, now St. Charles. Trust me, you'll enjoy great food, drinks, service. Cafe Napoli, Clayton, Town and Country, streets of St. Charles. And tell them the Cafe Napoli ambassador sent you.
Mustangs have it. Guess you better slow than Mustang down.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. Just as we went to break there, an alert popped up in front of me that Merrick Garland is apparently going to be talking about the raid at Trump's Mar-a-Lago home shortly. We'll be watching for that and giving you details of it as it happens. When they say soon, I don't know what they mean by soon. And maybe he'll begin to answer some of the questions, or maybe he'll do exactly what I told you in the beginning of this hour, that sources are saying that the DOJ was not in favor of doing it this way. That would be Merrick Garland, Attorney General, of course. But that FBI Director Christopher Wray is the one who made it happen as an official raid, armed agents. That's what some sources are saying. So we'll see if Merrick Garland throws Wray deeper under the bus, or he bears some responsibility, or just is really non-responsive to anything we need to know. And it's not just the search warrant being unsealed. It's the affidavit. What was in the affidavit? Who signed it? Who testified, giving evidence and so forth, that gave the judge, that's already a Obama crony, that gave him reason to believe, okay, go ahead with the raid. The judge has since told the DOJ, you really should unseal the warrant. Trump could do that. He could just simply say, here's a copy of the warrant, but I don't know if they have access to the affidavit so far. They may not. I mentioned going into the break that the Hispanic voters are leaving the Democrat Party in droves, and it is frightening to the Democrats. As I will also tell many of my black friends who are also conservative and those who are also Democrat, you're going to reach a tipping point here with all these illegals coming across that you are no longer going to be the sought-after minority. You'll be left at the back of the bus, so to speak, because Hispanics will be in such large numbers, they will outnumber the black populace and eventually the white populace at this rate. A Quinnipiac survey released just last month indicating Biden support among Hispanics stands at just 19%. 19%. Meantime, you got CNN, Axios, MSNBC, CBS, NBC, all of them putting a spotlight on Hispanic voters ditching the Democrat Party in recent weeks. But they say it's going to be difficult for Republicans to win them over. Not necessarily so much. Look at what happened down in Texas. Deep Blue County, won by Myra Flores, had been Democrat for 100 years. Biden won it handily. And there are two adjacent counties, all heavily Hispanic, and they're all likely to go red. There were some high-profile Hispanic conservatives attending CPAC down in Houston this last weekend, and they were saying, we welcome the opportunity to work with Republicans and conservatives to win the Hispanic vote, but we want to make sure that when that marriage happens between Hispanics and conservatives, our values are also protected. Adding, the Democrat Party has abandoned our values. One of them stating, and I'm quoting, we're pro-God, pro-life, pro-family, all about hard work. It's in our DNA. We are conservative. Those values do align with the Republican Party, and the current administration is doing a horrible job, hurting us tremendously economically And, of course, the southern border is also an issue that's impacting us. I'm trying to see if they quote exactly who made those remarks, but that was apparently among those Hispanics that were attending the CPAC party. That's the conservative party that a gathering, I should say, that Trump was speaking to earlier. Let me see. Another one was being asked. When I'm talking to voters every single day, they ask me, it's a Latino speaking. She said, what is Latinx? What are these pronouns? See, at the end of the day, we're not talking about pronouns. We're talking about securing the border. We're talking about inflation. We're talking about the economy. When they hear Joe Biden calling us unique as a breakfast taco, that does not identify with us. Another one pointing out, I think Latinos have always been conservative in their hearts. I believe Democrats duped Latinos into believing they were our party, but now they push so hard against family values, so hard into brainwashing our children and damaging our pocketbook. Those of us who came here, maybe even illegally, we came for the American dream. And now that looks like that's going to turn upside down. And many of them are not in favor, as I've told you numerous times, they're not in favor of the open border. Because there are those coming across the border that want to have the American dream. There are others coming across bringing drugs, crime, and then they settle in some of those same neighborhoods. And, of course, then they become the victims, those already living there. 19, what did I say the number was for the latest Quinnipiac for Biden? 19%? That's going to be really interesting. Midterms are a big indicator of what will happen in 2024 as well. Coming up in the second hour, IRS agents being hired and being advised on the IRS website, be ready to carry a gun and use deadly force if necessary. Oh, then they took that down off the website. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.